And welcome back to Dad's on the Air, coming to you around Australia on the Community Radio Network. In this program, we bring you informing and entertaining conversations with a wide range of interesting people on topics of fatherhood, family and parenting, men's and boys' issues, and more. Our special guest today is David Cameron, who is the author of a new book called Convict Era, Port Arthur, Misery of the Deepest Dye. David received first-class honours in prehistoric archaeology at the University of Sydney and later completed his PhD in paleoanthropology at ANU. He has conducted field work in Australia, Europe, the Middle East and Asia. David is the author of several books on Australian military history and has published some 15 books in addition to over 60 papers in internationally peer-reviewed journals. The new book is called Convict Era, Port Arthur. David, welcome to Dad's on the Air.
Hi, Bill. How's it going?
Very well, thank you. Now, David, the natural setting of Port Arthur is I think it is absolutely beautiful, but the British saw it differently than perhaps the original inhabitants, didn't they?
Oh, yeah. But the people that went originally discovered Stuart Coe did comment on how beautiful it was. And even people that visited the site who entered through the waters as opposed to going through the bush, the first thing that struck them was just how beautiful the place was. Then you'd land Port Arthur and that would quickly vanish.
I think you raised it. There's a mystery here. What did happen to those original inhabitants of the area around Port Arthur?
We don't know. They were last seen in the area in the 1830s and... as I raised in the book, we've got to question why they suddenly disappear. During the wars to remove the indigenous peoples from Tasmania from the island, there was the Black Line where they tried to basically capture all the indigenous people on the island. And they were all going to, the whole idea was to push the island, but the original indigenous people placed them in an area where they'd be housed, for want of a better word, and that was to be the Tasman Peninsula, of course, which would end up being where Port Arthur was located. So the original idea was to corral, one of a better word, all of the indigenous peoples into it was going to be a military line that would extend across Tasmania. They'd move, capture all the indigenous people, then push them into the Tasman Peninsula and lock them in there. And at the same time, they were also going to construct the convict settlement there. So basically, the Tasman Peninsula was going to be a place for the indigenous peoples as well as the convicts.
And that was an initiative of George Arthur himself, I think, wasn't it?
That's right. Truly bizarre concept, but yeah, that was in the 1830s. In the end, it didn't work out that way. But there were comments about there were indigenous people there in the 1820s, and by the 1830s, they were no longer there. So we've got to question exactly why is that the case, and one hates to think what the possibilities might be.
Yes, you'd wonder why Arthur himself would want to be recognised as this place with his name. But and I think there was an attempt to change the name, but
Port Arthur just stuck by that. That was in the 1860s, I think, and by then everyone knew it as Port Arthur, and Port Arthur remained. Didn't stay named Carnarvon for long. Went back to Port Arthur.
The story of Port Arthur and the story set out in your book, it is really an integral part of the story of convicts in Australia, isn't it? And it's interesting, you refer to the convict stain. I guess that was partly behind the wanting to change the name from Port Arthur.
Yeah, well, I'm part of the convict stain. My ancestors are first and second fleeters, so I proudly wear the name of the convict stain. Back then, of course, convict being convict associated with a convict was considered to be a stain. So that whole thing has now changed. But back then, it certainly was. You didn't want to recognise being from having convict heritage at all. That's for sure.
Yeah, I mean, it's okay for us now to talk about our convict heritage. It's even, you know, a bit fashionable. But did your fathers and grandfathers perhaps have a different view of that expression?
My father. My grandfather probably did, but it was probably my father's generation when it, in the 60s, 70s when it started the term. But up until then, it was just a no-no.
Yeah. Now, Port Arthur is located on the Tasman Peninsula. It's really just a short drive southeast from Hobart. But to cross over onto the peninsula, you must pass Eagle Hawk Neck, as the only way on or off the peninsula, and that helped with the security. But can you tell us about that, the added security they put in there?
Yeah, well, most people who've been there know about the dog line, which was basically nine dogs that were strung across this narrow neck of land, and they were chained. So anyone who had to go past that narrow neck had to pass through the dog line, and if you weren't a visitor where they would actually have the dogs held back for you, if you're an escaping convict, you either had to go around to the east to go into the ocean and try and get to Forrester's Peninsula, or you have to go around to the east into Norfolk Bay. So the dreaded dog line was basically just a wall of dogs that's stopping anyone from getting across that very narrow neck of land that wasn't supposed to, and were guarded by convicts, by soldiers originally. They used to throw offal from a cattle station into Norfolk Bay and on the other side of the neck to try and attract sharks to try and stop convicts from going into the water. So they were hoping that the sharks and the dogs would stop the convicts from escaping from Tasman Peninsula.
And these weren't cuddly little King Charles spaniels, were they?
No, these were vicious. They were half-starved, so they were angry, hungry, and, they were very vicious dogs.
And that's another interesting thing about Tasmania. I noticed that they don't have any dingoes there, and perhaps some of the other creepy, crawly things that we have in the mainland.
No, they had the thylacine, and compared to a dingo, they were pretty slow, and they were low on numbers, so... The thylacines were no competition, so there was no real competition, a hierarchy of competition in the animal kingdom on the Tasman Peninsula. Unlike the dingoes that are pretty good hunting dogs on the mainland, the thylacine wasn't particularly good. And they used to want dogs on the island because they had to use dogs to kill kangaroos. They wanted hunting dogs. And to get a really good hunting dog on Tasmania in the 1820s was basically a salary for a high-ranking clerk. That's how much it would cost you to get a dog. Kangaroo meat was very vital to the early survival of the original inhabitants of Tasmania because, there was quite a while before they started establishing farms, cattle and sheep, and for the first decade they were reliant on kangaroo and emu meat. It got to the point where the actual emus on Tasmania became extinct because of the hunting.
And you mentioned the thylacine then. I guess that's more popularly known as the Tasmanian tiger. For some reason, I guess because of the stripes, but it became extinct as well, didn't it?
Yeah, I think the last one was the famous footage of it in the 1920s, the 1930s, this lone thylacine in this cage. Because people now and then say they see it, but there's been no proof that it's, I think we would have found it by now if there were any around. Hopefully there might be a few lurking around in the parts of Tasmania, but we'll never know, probably.
Your book reveals all the fascinating history behind the buildings that are still on the site now. Despite its isolation, I was interested to see that Port Arthur managed a few firsts.
Yeah, it had the first railway line in Australia, which ran from near Eagle Hawk Neck down to Long Bay, which is just south of Port Arthur. Now, when I say railway line, it was propelled by convicts, so it was basically a cart, but it ran on a railway line, a wooden railway line. Remnants of it still survive. Had the largest building in Tasmania at one point, which was the granary, which, of course, everyone knows now is a penitentiary. That big, beautiful building that people see, that's like the... When people think of Port Arthur, they think of that big penitentiary. That used to be a granary. And at the time, it was the largest building in Tasmania. And I think it may have been one of the largest in Australia at the time, before it was converted into the penitentiary. That was our first going on with Port Arthur.
And perhaps less savoury, is it Point Pua also had a...
Oh, yes.
It was the first?
Point Pua was the first established place for children, for wards of the state in the British Empire. It was basically for convict children, male children. I think the youngest was about 9, and you were there till you were 18. And you were sent there, but you were never given a stated sentence in terms of your sentence there for 2 years. You were there basically the pleasure of the commandant. If he decided you were behaving well, he might let you out. So you'd be sent there, but never really never knew how long you might be there. And a lot of these kids who grew up there then basically found themselves in the adult male prison at Port Arthur. And Point Pure is just on the other... If anyone knows where the Island of the Dead is,
Point Pure is just off the Island of the Dead. You can see a bit of a peninsula coming out, and that's where Point Pure was. So it was right next to Port Arthur. So you had the boy convicts, and a few hundred metres away, maybe less than a kilometre away, you had the male convicts at Port Arthur.
A terrible thought that a 9-year-old child could be exposed to these sort of conditions.
Oh, yeah.
We're speaking today with David Cameron, who is the author of a new book called Convict Era, Port Arthur, Misery of the Deepest Dye. We're going to take a short break now, so at about this point of the program, we always ask our guests, David, have you got a song for us today?
Yeah, Beatles, Let It Be.
In times of trouble, Mother Mary comes to me, speaking words of wisdom, let it be. And in my hour of darkness, she is standing right in front of me, speaking words of wisdom, let it be. Let it be, let it be, let it be. Whisper words of wisdom, let it be. And when the broken-hearted people living in the world agree, there will be an answer, let it be. But though they may be parted, there is still a chance that they will see. There will be an answer, let it be.
And that was Let It Be by the Beatles, as specially chosen for us today by our guest David Cameron, who is the author of a new book called Convict Era, Port Arthur, Misery of the Deepest Dye. David, you make the point that some 44% of all the convicts sent to Australia went to Tasmania. It's with the conditions at Port Arthur and 10 years before that at Macquarie Harbour. Was this seen as extra punishment rather than any attempt to reform?
Yeah, people who were sent to Macquarie Harbour and then that closed down in 1833, I think it was, and then Port Arthur took up in 1833. You'd be sent to Port Arthur if you'd done a second offence. So if you're on a convict, you'd normally arrive in New South Wales or Tasmania, you'd end up in Sydney or Parramatta or Hobart, or you'd be assigned to farmers around the area. But if you did another offence while you're a convict, you're packed off to in Tasmania, you're packed off to Port Arthur. While some political prisoners from, like Canadians and Irish, were sent to Port Arthur, most convicts that were sent there because they'd had a second or third offence while being a convict in Hobart or an outstation somewhere. So it tended to be the what they considered the worst of the worst were sent to Port Arthur to teach them a lesson.
You describe some of the men sent to Port Arthur. I mean, it's interesting, there were no women prisoners there, were there?
No, there were women servants. There were some women convicts who were there as servants to the commandant and a few senior officers, but they didn't last there long because they decided they were too much of a distraction to the prisoners. So the women were packed off, and of course women prisoners and convicts end up going to Cascade, their own hellhole near Hobart. But as far as convicts go, it was pure male only. There were officers' wives and children that were there, but of course they were kept well away from the convicts, and they had their own areas where they could be kept apart from the prisoners, convicts. Not to say they would have seen the convicts on a daily basis, but imagine being a school kid at Port Arthur.
Yeah. Yeah, certainly in those days. But mind you, the women didn't get it that easy because if you go to the Cascades Women's Factory, right, that's a frightening place as well.
Oh, yeah.
You talk about individuals who were there, and one of particular interest is Alexander Pierce. I wonder if you could tell us a bit about his story.
Yeah, he actually didn't end up at Port Arthur. He was at Port Macquarie Harbour, sorry. He was basically the only guy to escape from Macquarie Harbour twice, and both times he turned to cannibalism. And I've got a quite extensive chapter, there's a fascinating story about his escape from Macquarie Harbour. He finally made his way to Hobart. He admitted that along the way there was about 12, and then by the time he got to Hobart, two other guys quickly escaped from them because they realised cannibalism was going on, so they went back to Macquarie Harbour. But the other eight, so there was 10. So the other eight, basically, one got knocked off every week and was used as protein for the rest of the party until there was only one, and he was the last man standing. And he got sent back to Macquarie Harbour, and soon after he did a runner with another guy who should have known better because people probably knew what he'd done to survive that long. And this guy ended up getting killed just a few days out. And apparently Pierce preferred human meat, which he was found with fish and I think it was pork, but he decided he preferred human flesh, so he just killed this guy, and he was caught about a week after with human flesh in his pockets, and he just admitted, "Yeah, I prefer human flesh." But they said, "Well, you got pork, you got fish. What are you doing eating the guy?" And I said, "Well, I prefer eating men; it's much more tasty."
So you wonder how, when there were eight of them, they decided who was going to be the next one to be eaten.
One axe. So whoever had the axe was the guy in charge. And Pierce originally didn't have the axe until the very last. And the other guy that had maintained the axe right through slipped up, and because both of them knew it was going to be you or me next. And Pierce went out.
Well, some people.
He was actually hung in Hobart. He was sent back for that second killing. He was actually taken. I think about 1828 or something. He was hung in Hobart.
And I guess it's some indication of the conditions that a lot of people that were hanged were quite happy to go to the gallows, weren't they, to get out of their mortal toils.
Yeah, well, sorry, he was hung in 1824. Macquarie Harbour, in many ways, was probably even worse than Port Arthur, and I've got a few chapters on Macquarie Harbour because it leads to lead up to Port Arthur. And there were circumstances where a few people who were hung at Macquarie Harbour were seen to dance on the gallows before they died, so they preferred afterward that they were welcome to death because they just didn't want to stay at Macquarie Harbour. Another point is, at Macquarie Harbour, people would suffer a severe wounding in order to get back to Hobart. So, A, two guys would get together and say, hey, why don't you hit me on the head? I'll accuse you of trying to kill me. Both of us will get sent back to Hobart because for a capital offence, would be a capital offence, had to be helped up with at Hobart. We'll stay in Hobart for 6 months while the court case is going on. Then I'll say, no, you didn't mean to do it. Then we'll both get off and then we'll be sent back to Macquarie Harbour. But we would have had 8 months away from the place. So people used to do that. Two guys would collude to someone would do an injury to one other guy and then they'd both be sent to Hobart, have a holiday, want for a better word, for 6 months. Court case would collapse because the other guy would say, no, you've got it all back to front. No, you didn't mean to do anything. Then they'd both be sent back Macquarie Harbour. That's how bad the place was.
And
some guys would kill another guy for tobacco. Someone allowed to have tobacco when they thought they'd rather have one or two last smokes before they were hung. So they would actually kill a man. So they'd get dragged back to Hobart. And before they're hung, they'd be able to have some tobacco.
No point in thinking about lung cancer at that stage, I don't think. But so did some people actually successfully escape from Port Arthur?
Most of them got caught, because Martin Cash, he escaped twice but got caught. The second time he got sent to Norfolk Island. The biggest breakout was when the Commandant's boat was hijacked. So it was bizarre because the Commandant's boat was manned by convicts who were sailors. It's not a good idea to put sailors in charge of the Commandant's boat. And one day they all decided they'd take the Commandant's boat without the Commandant in it. And they sailed outside the heads and the Commandant grabbed another boat and tried to chase them, but of course the convict sailors were in a better boat, so Commandant Booth watched it sail into the sunset. And they got on the run for about 2 months before they got caught in Sydney, not in Sydney, but in New South Wales. 2 months later, they were taken back to Port Arthur. I think someone was sent to Norfolk Island for their troubles. Others were drowned. The two guys made a boat and their bodies were found a couple of weeks later in Sullivan's Cove. They obviously didn't make it out. And there's stories of later on, some of the convicts who were mentally unwell would just wander off into the bush and never be found again.
And what was so terrible at Port Arthur? Was it the regular floggings or the food or something else?
The solitude. By the 1840s, they were trying to stamp out corporal punishment. They were turning to solitary confinement. I thought that was a much better way of dealing with troubles in prisoners. That's why they established the separate prison, which is basically every man had his own cell. Most people think, oh, that's good, I've got my own cell. But you weren't allowed to talk. There was strictly no sound. You weren't allowed to see any other convicts. You had to wear a hood any time you're outside your cell. And you're in your cell all day. You had some work to do. You'd go to the church that was there perhaps 2 days a week, but again, you had to wear your hood. You weren't allowed to communicate with any prisoners or staff. All instructions were given by a clap of the hand. One clap would mean this, two claps would mean something else. And so the guys would quickly go insane because the only thing they could hear was the ticking of the clock at the end of the hallway. And they even had like carpet so they couldn't hear the wardens or the guards walking around. Solitude basically ended up driving guys insane, and they ended up having one part of the wing becoming a lunatic asylum. For those guys, just went insane.
Now, you mentioned a bit earlier the small island called the Isle of the Dead, which you can actually see from Port Arthur. That's where this fellow called John Barron lived alone, and a cemetery with more graves than headstones, I guess you'd say.
Yeah, the convicts weren't allowed headstones. Only towards the end were some headstones established. Only the military and the civil people that died that were also buried there. They were buried, the guards and the civil personnel were buried on the high ground, the convicts were buried in the low ground, and the convicts' graves were not marked, even to this day. There's been archaeological work to establish where they are. There is some suggestion there may be mass graves, not say mass graves, there might be two or three bodies, I'm not talking about 30 or 40 people in a grave, and one or two or three people buried in the same grave or right next to each other. But the only ones that have grave markers are the civil and the military personnel there. And, the grave digger there thought the place was haunted. And even the last grave digger there, Jeffries, he claimed that the devil appeared one night and went to Zurich and wouldn't go on the island for a week. He originally wanted to go on the island, and the guards and the
And one of the last visitors to Port Arthur in about 1870, I think, was Marcus Clarke. So he, the historian, he had a good historian and novelist, I guess, but he had good inspiration for his book for the term of his natural life, didn't he?
Yeah, of course, it's based on Port Arthur, and he spent some time there. And he wrote a few articles as well, and much of that is basically based on his experiences of what he was told about Port Arthur. Of course, it's a work of fiction, but there is some historical reality to it, obviously.
Port Arthur closed down in about 1877, and then it suffered from fires and floods. But look, I think the great thing is for people interested in Port Arthur now, it really is a wonderful place to visit, wouldn't you think?
Yeah. I was hoping to complete the research last year because COVID ruled that out. Definitely encourage anyone who hasn't been there to go there. It's a beautiful place. It's well documented. The National Parks people have done a fantastic job, and I'd highly recommend people going there to have a look at the place and understand the brutality of actually what happened there. Mm. There's probably only been one. Like I said, Macquarie Harbour was probably actually worse in many respects because it was so isolated, and Norfolk Island was probably worse, but you've got three places, Norfolk Island, Macquarie Harbour and Port Arthur, they're all bad.
Yeah.
For convicts. You don't want to be there.
No, but yes, now they have special activities for children. When you arrive, you get a convict name and you can follow that convict around the site, and they have a whole lot of other really great things there. So, that's highly recommended. Look, we're running out of time, but we're speaking today with David Cameron, who is the author of this new book, Convict Era Port Arthur. So it remains for me to give a special thank you. David, thank you very much for being a guest on Dad's on the Air.
Thank you, Bill, and thanks to your listeners for listening.
Oh, it's great. It's great to be able to talk to you. And don't forget, we'd love to hear from any of our listeners. You can go to our website, dadsontheair.com.au, send us an email, and we'll be in touch. If you would like to listen to this program or any of our shows, go to your favourite podcast app, or you can go to our website, dadsontheair.com.au, or you can follow us on Facebook or Twitter. And we'll be back next week with another show on Dads on the Air.